Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. So on this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to do something just a little bit different than what we do typically here on the podcast. In honor of this weekend's diversity conference, we wanted to bring back a few of our favorite conversations from the past couple years. These conversations are with leaders of executive MBA student organizations, specifically the Network of Executive Women, the Black Executive MBA Student Organization, as well as the Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Here you'll have conversations with past leaders of NEW, the Network of Executive Women, as well as Ron Cook, who's past president of the Black Executive MBA Student Organization and actually a guest on the alumni panel for this year's Diversity Conference, as well as Nicole Reyna, a member of our Executive MBA Class of 2022, and also a member of the Executive MBA Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And she will be a guest on this weekend's student panel as part of the Diversity Conference. All that's to say, we have a lot to share with you here in this episode. It's packed with great conversation. So without further ado, here is a very special Exec MBA podcast.
Christine, I imagine Caroline runs through all of the things that NEW is doing currently. How does that align with sort of the conception of NEW as you and your classmates were thinking about founding the organization? What was the goal for you as you were getting started?
Yeah. First, I just want to say, with the leadership of Amanda and Caroline and others, it's surpassed what we hoped for at this point. And it's just so touching and so warms my heart to hear about all of this progress and these great things that the NEW is doing. When I was a student at Darden, my classmates and I all kind of recognized that there wasn't an organization specifically serving the needs of Darden's executive women students. We participated in the GWIB, but we felt that we needed something serving the unique needs and stages of life of women in the executive program. And in 2017, when my classmates and I and Amanda was involved as well, worked to stand up the NEW, our aim was really to set the foundation, to like establish what's the governance structure, what are our aims and priorities, to write the charter, and then to start getting the word out both to prospective students and to alumni that we existed and that we wanted to help serve the professional development and networking needs of Darden's executive women. And I just am so thrilled to see where it has gone and how it has grown since then. And it's absolutely meeting and surpassing the desires that we had back in 2017. So thank you, Amanda and Caroline, and you know your classmates as well, for all of the work that you've done to progress it forward.
I just want to say, though, Christine's leadership and the leadership group from her class, all of those women were phenomenal in laying that foundation that Christine talked about, though. The wonderful thing about Darden is if you say, how come there isn't an organization that does X, the school leadership will say, well, you can create one. But the downside of that is you have to create one. Not an insignificant amount of work to create an official organization within the University of Virginia construct. This is a big bureaucracy for the right reasons, to make sure that everything is being done in ways that are judicious and ways that are appropriately open to all student participation. And I appreciate the reasons that it's like that. But there's a big lift involved. And Christine and her colleagues in the class of 2018 were instrumental in laying that. And then I feel like as the next leadership from the class of 2019, our group, it was almost as if they carved the path for us and then we tried to pave the path a little bit. So it was a little less rocky and we did a little bit of programming and tried to do a little bit of engagement with some of our alums, especially from just the class prior. And I know that they've been building upon the foundation that Christine and her colleagues laid every year. So Caroline, I just want to echo what Christine said. It's so wonderful to hear about all the great things you're doing. I love it. And I think it's absolutely wonderful to see that you are absolutely executing the vision that we had from the beginning and going beyond it. It's so great.
Well, I think there's just mutual admiration in this group because, you know, none of us could have done this alone. And I feel like every year we build on it and we just get a little bit further to our full vision for what this will continue to be in the future. And so I want to also give a shout out to Emma, who is a 2020 graduate and a new leader as well. And a lot of what we do, you know, this year and hopefully moving forward in new is because, and I say this to our members all the time, like 2020, the ladies of 2020 really took great care of the ladies of 2021. And the least we can do is pay that forward, if not do a little bit more. So each year it's a little bit easier to go through the programming or get new ideas through. So I feel very thankful for this group of very special ladies. And I feel very fortunate to be part of it in a small way. So thank you.
So Christine, I want to pick up on something that you said about executive format students having sort of unique needs in different life stages. And I think we know that to be true from our experience, but how did that shape and inform how you thought about supporting your classmates or what NEW's purpose was?
Yeah, so executive women in the Darden program are experienced in the workforce. So they've got some time professionally under their belt and may be interested in advancing in their careers, moving up in their current organizations or making career changes. And there's a lot of hurdles that they can face in networking, in overcoming existing biases, in building connections that they can leverage, in having people around them that will rally and champion for them, you know, as they make those strides. And further, sometimes women in the executive program have additional priorities outside of school and outside of work. That might be family members, spouses, children. And we wanted to shape an organization that lifts each other, that of women and allies that lift each other up and that are open and accepting and non-judgmental and recognize that we all have lots of different priorities, but nonetheless, we all still want to be successful in our personal and in our professional lives, and that we can reach the goals that we have by supporting one another. And so I think that was very illustrative of the spirit that we went into shaping the NEW with.
And that is a question we get a lot from prospective students about the culture of the program. I think people are trying to figure out, is this going to be a competitive environment? Is this going to be a supportive environment? I think of NEW and as a great example of sort of the supportive nature of the environment. Yes. Amanda, how did you and your classmates support each other as you progressed through the 21 months of the program? Everybody's got so much on their plate here. We say it time and again, you can't do this by yourself, but examples are always the best way to tell that story.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a great way to put it. When I had prospectives ask me if I thought Darden was competitive, I said, absolutely. But the biggest competition you're in is with yourself. People in this program are all driven high performers who want to do well. But I never felt that my success was linked to someone else's success or that I had to beat other people. And I think that the women in my class were a phenomenal support going through the program. There were so many life changes. My class actually was one where no one had a baby during the class. I know that's not true for Christine's class or the class of 20. And Caroline, I don't know if there are women in your class. Okay, so your class is, but you know, there are people who are going through life changes, moves. One of my good friends from the program moved across the country in the middle of the program to take a new job, which was fantastic. But she said, I'm essentially going to have no home for at least a week because I'm moving from California to South Carolina. And people just rallied around her. You've got your team that you're working with, but then also other women said, let us know what you need. Zoom in, we'll give you notes, we'll help with case prep, we'll do whatever we can. there were people who had hurricanes come through, and this was actually two of the men in my class, but they lived in Texas. And in the fall of 2017, it was when Hurricane Harvey, I think it was, horribly devastated Houston, and two of our classmates lived in Houston. And the class got together and we gave them each Visa gift cards for whatever they may need. And they turned around and donated them and said, there are others in greater need than us. But how wonderful that you all were so concerned about our well-being, and people were reaching out to say, do you need anything? Even from the perspective of people starting businesses, one of the women in my class is the founder of Single Baked Sweets. And if you are not familiar with Single Baked Sweets, a complete plug for Melissa and Single Baked Sweets. They are individual sized sweets that you can bake in the oven. You just need 2 tablespoons of butter, and they're so tasty. But Melissa was getting going during this and used a lot of the resources of the Darden program, the Batten Institute. And as she was getting going, she got support for her farm market appearances from other women in the class who would go out and volunteer to help sell her product. People were wearing Single Baked Sweets t-shirts, and she's got this thing going. And it was fun to watch that progression and to be part of her journey too and help support her in that. So I think there are so many examples that wherever you are and whatever you're trying to do, people are going to be there to help support through life changes, business changes, whatever the case may be.
And Caroline, I think about some of the formal things that New has been up to. So I think you've already started a mentoring program for the new first-year students as they are just getting started. Gosh, they just had their first weekend residency, a time when people are, I'd say, nervous in the program. You're trying to figure out, am I doing this right? Is all this stuff important? Am I reading too much? Not enough? How do I manage decision analysis, global economics? Talk a bit more about some of the formal things and maybe just informal things that New is doing now.
Sure. Yes, we are carrying on the legacy that maybe the class of 2020 started of mentorship between the two, you know, the first and second years of the EMBA program. And you're paired up with, ladies are paired up across the two groups. We have a very high level kind of support guide that we send out to the second years as far as like when they should be thinking of reaching out, what they should be talking about, just to kind of spark some ideas. But it's really self-driven. It's something that, you know, I think every person, every woman is different. And so some are very engaged in that partnership. Others check in periodically. But it's nice to know you have kind of an access to the inside scoop, so to speak, and just discuss strategies for success. So that's been great. Another thing we just started, it was I was curious how I was coming across in class, especially with Zoom. It's hard to read the room. Like, did anyone understand what I just said, or did that land, or did I really move the topic forward? And so we came up with this idea of pairing up women within the class of 2021 with one another. And at the beginning of every On Ground, I send a survey out, and you can comment on how women did when they were contributing, whether they hedged, maybe they were too long-winded, maybe their point was a little bit off topic, maybe they made a great point, but you don't hear from them as much, or you hear from them just enough. It's good, it's great, and then areas for improvement kind of feedback. And I aggregate those results at the end of a weekend and send that feedback to a person's buddy so that they can meet after the weekend and just debrief on trends that women are seeing. It's a very constructive feedback loop. It's not meant in any way to tear someone down. It's really to help build them up and as to what they're trying to communicate in class and how they can improve or keep doing what they're doing. I did not read all the feedback, of course, but I was just really impressed with the amount of thought that went into the feedback. And it's so clear that everyone is committed to one another's success. And so that's a recent development that we just did last On Grounds, and we're going to do again this On Ground. So always thinking of something.
And that was an excerpt of my conversation with three past presidents of the Network of Executive Women, Caroline Clark, Christine Campbell, and Amanda Richardson. Now we're going to turn our attention to a conversation I recorded a couple years ago with past Black Executive MBA Student Organization President Ron Cook. As previously noted, Ron is a graduate from the Executive MBA class of 2020, and he is also a panelist as part of this weekend's alumni panel at the Darden Diversity Conference.
You and I have many conversations about a lot of different things. I've always been struck by the fact that you are a very deep thinking individual and a very curious person. So, you know, the things that you talked about here are big ideas, you know, not just capitalism, but conscious capitalism, promoting business in an inclusive way. You know, when did these ideas become important to you? How did they become important to you? Have they always been important to you?
Sure. So I think I started to see that entrepreneurship looked different in the media than how it looked in, say, my home. And these ideas have been important because I always wondered why people who look like me didn't seem to accelerate as quickly as maybe others. And I watched my mom ran a tax business for a long time, right? Along with her other, you know, jobs, which is, you know, I don't know, maybe the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree in that regard. And I would see her business and then I'd say, okay, well, these guys own a similar business and the economic profiles are completely different. Why? So that question mark led me to dig into business more and to dig into the social constructs that I might be unconsciously believing and buying into. So that led me to have a more challenging disposition towards those constructs. And what I see now is that there are ways that imbalance can be balanced. And it takes someone to raise their hand and say, hey, I'm not the only one who sees this. Let's take some action over here. And I think that what's been helpful is that Darden allows that creative thinking and you get the tools to actually take action. I think that the seeds going back to when were probably sprinkled when I was going door to door in Oregon and I was trying to sell books. Okay, this is probably the least efficient way to distribute anything. But I started to understand that I could be doing anything with my summer, but instead I'm learning how to run a one-man shop. I mean, I didn't do it very well, but I know I could do it better. How does that happen?
So there's a lot in what you just shared. And we have Darden faculty that are looking at some of those issues. Marilla Hernandez right now is looking at how, you know, investors evaluate entrepreneurial teams and looking at bias. She teaches in the executive MBA program. David Tuvey just published a recent article about people tend to think about entrepreneurs in this kind of archetypal way, right? You think about the guru, the sort of genius, the gunslinger, these kind of larger categories. And entrepreneurs are not always that sexy or classifiable. There's a lot of hard work in the background. It's an iterative process. Many people's first idea is not the best idea, but you learn through all of that. You know, we talked about your sandwich business. We talked about, you know, selling books. What are some other entrepreneurial experiences that you've had that have kind of informed your thinking on these issues?
Sure. You had an interesting comment in that the archetypal entrepreneur being a type. And I think the gunslinger one is probably the one that's most, I guess, propagated in the media. And I would almost argue that entrepreneurs are probably more risk averse. And it's about how you value risk. Do you want your income distributed among multiple sources or a single source? Right. And you need both, right? As an entrepreneur, I need to hire people, right? But at the same time, I don't think it's more risky. I think it's where you're placing your risk and how you mitigate it. And I think what's informed my decisions and some of the other experiences is that I was able to take a step out on something that everyone else thought was a little weird. And I remember when I had just gotten laid off from a role, and I knew that my skill set was still valuable. So a couple calls later, I had my first couple of clients and sort of built a consulting practice based on what I was doing for another company. Now, most people would say, go find a job, right? And I'm thinking, well, if I was just doing that with a job and that was unstable, why wouldn't I do this for myself and stabilize my own income? And we can talk about what that did to my social life on a different podcast.
Well, the gunslinger one, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. The model of entrepreneurship that we teach at Darden, I mean, there's many different approaches, but the model that's taught at Darden is an effectuation model, which is effectively a de-risking strategy, right? You get your customers involved, you do what you have, you do what your idea with the least amount sort of resources. You try to make do with what you have, get your customers involved early, try to evaluate product market fit, and have your customers help you figure out what your product should be. It is a very low risk approach to entrepreneurship. I've been fortunate to have a number of people on the podcast who've talked about entrepreneurship, and particularly David Tuvey, Jason Brewster, some of the folks that are involved with the Batten Institute and the iLab down at Charlottesville. They stress that. It's like entrepreneurship is really not that risky when you first get started. It's not really that much at stake. You just have an idea. You're trying to figure out, is this a good idea? And, it's good for people to hear that. I think particularly for executive MBA students, you come here, you've worked for somebody else for long enough. You know, that's oftentimes the motivator. It's right. You got the skill set. You got an idea. You got a class. You got classmates. Why not give it a try?
Exactly.
So do you think you talked about your social life? Do you think entrepreneurship's in your future? Again?
Absolutely. My wife knows who she married, so I think we've ironed out some of the wrinkles regarding the entrepreneurial leap. And now with the tools and the skills that I've been able to hone here for the last, I guess, 16 months or so?
It's getting there.
Wow. I feel more confident. I think confidence has a lot to do with what you think you're capable of doing effectively. And it also means that you have a means of deploying that skill idea to a captive audience. It's almost as if, to your point, to effectuate effectively, you're going to need to know they want it, I can deliver it. And with that in mind, why not go into an entrepreneurial lifestyle and use all of the skills that I've earned from all of my past experiences and all of the networking and people that have poured into me? I think that would behoove my own future to give back in a way, add more to the world than I'm taking out of it.
So you think that social impact component would be part of your entrepreneurial path going forward?
I think that it will be a component because of who I am. I'm not sure if my specific enterprise would allot a social, component for any specific endeavor. But I know that the profits that I would take from the business would 100% be redeployed elsewhere, as they already are now. And I think that you can do good business without exploiting. I think that's the idea with conscious capitalism. Maybe you're not using that actual business vehicle to say 10% of these proceeds go to, you know, left-handed people who can, you know, sip tea with their pinky up. But you can use the profits in a way that are not just me.
It's interesting the extent to which people expect that from companies now, right? So stakeholder theory now been adopted by the corporate roundtable. You know, you start to hear more CEOs saying, like, maybe it's not all about shareholder value. Sure. And you see people scoring companies, their interest in these companies based upon the values of those companies, the expressed values of those companies. I can't imagine that's going away anytime soon.
I agree. And I think that your investor base is becoming more aware that the impact of companies can have on the greater community environment and the stakeholders and all throughout the value chain. So if you exploit one piece, you're definitely going to pay for it. To me, that's just doing good business. It's not social impact. It's the way business should be. It's the way capitalism is supposed to work. I don't know if we've ever seen ideal capitalism. I think we've seen versions of capitalism that have been exploitive, and the exploited typically don't have a voice. And so once it's discovered, it's like, oh, we need to fix this. So I think that's a reaction to the pressure from investors and customers, your two sources of capital, one retained earnings, one in the actual capitalization of the enterprise, that are demanding, we're going to do this well so we can beat our competition. You can't keep exploiting and stay ahead. That's a short-term focus.
And that was an excerpt from my conversation with Ron Cook, a graduate in our executive MBA class of 2020, as well as a past president of the Black Executive MBA student organization. And now, last but not least, wanted to share an excerpt from my recent conversation with Nicole Reyna. Nicole is a member of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee for our executive MBA program. And as previously noted, she is also a panelist on this weekend's student panel for the Diversity Conference. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the full episode with Nicole that we shared a few weeks back, certainly encourage you to do so. Without further ado, here is an excerpt from that conversation.
At work, you're now moving into this diversity, equity, and inclusion space and doing this work. You're also a member of the diversity committee here in our executive MBA program. We've had some of your colleagues on the podcast to talk a little bit about the diversity committee. I wonder what attracted you to this work and to serving in this way?
So when I was doing my business school research back in the day, I actually had this interest in human capital. And the more that I researched that, I sort of found myself drawn towards diversity, equity, inclusion. Now it's obviously like a very hot topic, so I feel like hopefully I'm getting in at the right time. But I had spoken with a lot of folks who were in that role, and sort of the two pathways that I saw were, more traditional, like in HR, and this became a specialty, but a lot of people went to business school and did consulting and sort of like found themselves in this space. So that is obviously like an interest of mine, like professionally for being on it. But personally, I just feel that the values of diversity, equity, and inclusion are ones that are very important in all aspects of life, but especially in an academic setting where we're here to learn and we want to make sure that everybody has the same access and opportunities to learn and to be successful. I think it's also sort of about like leveling the playing field a little bit. We come from very different backgrounds, whether that's gender, race, socioeconomic status. And I really think that it's important to sort of pay it forward. Like we were able to get to this point, and I just want to try to do my best to help everybody feel like they are supported and are getting, you know, the opportunities that they should have here.
I think that's very powerful, and it speaks to kind of the culture and the sense of community that exists within the program. I think that's sometimes surprising to prospective students that people are invested in the full experience in this kind of way. It's not just about getting an MBA. It's not just about schedule time, convenience, that there's also this layer of sort of extracurricular engagement, which is not always what people imagine when they think about working professional programs.
Yeah, that was another thing that I really liked about Darden, about this program, because you're exactly right. You don't normally think about that, but I was really interested when I heard that there was a program for women and for the different affinity clubs. And basically you can start any sort of club that you want if you have enough interest, which is great too. And I was really excited to be part of the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee here. But yeah, it's really powerful to see how many people care about creating a strong community even before we met each other. I remember that people had, you know, set up these Zoom meetings, these happy hours, like once a week for us to get to know each other. And that was just like, you know, it sort of set the tone for the whole program, that everybody was already excited. They were ready to be sort of like vulnerable and get to know each other. It was really great.
Yeah, I think about your class, and I don't know if we'll ever have a class that was quite as motivated as the class of 2022 in terms of building connection prior to the start of school.
We were so desperate.
Well, it was an unusual time. You know, I mean, I think about this month, and from an admission standpoint, it felt like we were all on that journey together, so to speak, because, you know, March of 2020 rolls around. It felt like the world changed significantly almost overnight. And then all of a sudden, here we are in this virtual environment and trying to think about how do you help build a community? We're always a school that always, you know, cares about this. We think about it as a core value. But here we are now connecting virtually. And the way that I felt like your class responded and took on that leadership, even prior to the start of the program, those happy hours and WhatsApp conversation and just showing up for events, it felt like your class collectively knew each other better than any class we've ever had when orientation and leadership residency one, the first activities in the program, rolled around.
Yeah, and we had one of these gatherings at a big space outdoors. And it was sort of like online dating a little bit, because we had all seen each other on Zoom. And then we were trying to figure out who's who with the masks and, oh, this person's taller than I expected, or this person's shorter, or whatever. It was really funny. And it was really great to like be able to meet those people in person that we had developed relationships with through Zoom and WhatsApp and, you know, LR1 and all of that. So it was great.
Yeah, I will say from an admission standpoint, I met a bunch of your classmates, felt like about a month or so ago down in Charlottesville for a weekend that happened down there, just giving the students the opportunity to kind of explore Charlottesville. Obviously, LR1 for your class was virtual, and everybody, you know, really wanted to have that time on grounds, and to work with the program team to make that happen. And I was struck during that weekend by how many people I was meeting in person for the first time. That is not typical for an admissions person in this kind of work, where we have this kind of personal interaction with candidates as they're not only doing their research, choosing the school, but also onboarding. But what a treat it was to be around people, and continues through these weekend residencies. It's been nice now that things are moving in a more in-person direction over the past couple of weekend residencies, and with quarter seven for your class coming around, I'm looking forward to seeing the 2022s a little bit more.
Yeah, it was great this past residency when we were able to go to the Nationals game together. And I know that some of the incoming class was there too. So it was nice to have a little bit of interaction with them, build a little bit of rapport, and hopefully make them feel a little bit more comfortable and excited about coming here.
Yeah, the thing I've really also appreciated about your class and the leadership from the Executive Student Association, just the students generally, is there's this desire to build connection across classes. And, you know, that feels very real to me, not just because it's Darden and this kind of sense of community, but also for anybody choosing to pursue an MBA in an executive format at this particular juncture in your life and your career. I think you probably say this about MBA candidates generally: you want to meet as many people as you possibly can. You want to make as many connections as you possibly can. And so I've really appreciated the extent to which the 2022s have been curious about the incoming class. And we had 44 or so incoming students, class of 2023, at that ball game on Saturday night. And that was the first of hopefully many meetups between the two classes.
I definitely think we all want to meet a lot of people and make connections as much as possible. But I think it's also about taking a step back and realizing that, you know, when you start the program, it's like a fire hose turns off and it turns on and doesn't really turn off for quite a bit. And just to let people know that we're there for them is, I think, important. There were a few people in the class above us who went out of their way to make sure that we knew we weren't alone. And I think just creating more opportunities for folks in the incoming class to know that, especially in the first year, is really important. And that, if it's okay for me to talk about, that's one of the things that we're working on the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee, is sort of restructuring some of the programs that we have to be more of, we're calling it an ambassadorship right now. That word might change. We're trying to figure out the right word. But anyhow, we want to create these opt-in opportunities for people in our class to participate in these like quarterly touch points with the folks that are incoming. And we're hoping to partner with some of the affinity groups and ways to do that. But basically, like, we're going to give our class the opportunity to participate as much as they want or as little as they want. But I have a feeling people are going to want to participate a lot, just especially from our experience, you know, just to be authentically there for the incoming class. And I think it is really important to remember that we are all working individuals. So that was another reason for wanting to make it not too formal and give a lot of flexibility, but also just making sure that we're paying it forward.
And those were my conversations with some of our past leaders of executive MBA student organizations here at the Darden School of Business. As always, if you have comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's E-X-E-C, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. And until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.